about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Ray Gould, and he'll be answering your most important questions on building bamboo fly rods. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Ray a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Ray about building bamboo fly rods. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers online magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod-making techniques, stories about fishing bamboo rods, to rod-maker profiles, to classic tapers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit their website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. Before we introduce Ray, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawings. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Ray's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Ray's book, Building Bamboo Fly Rods. Here's how you can win. I should say, I correct myself, it is not building, it is constructing cane rods, excuse me. That's the name of Ray's book. And here's how you can win that book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The questions will be about something we talked about during the show, and you've got to submit your answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, use your best typing skills, try to be the first person, and you'll have a good chance at winning Ray's book, Constructing Cane Rods. Well, tonight, our guest is Ray Gould. Ray became a fly fisherman in 1958 when he first visited Glimpse Lake in British Columbia, now his favorite spot on Earth. He served as president of the Northwest Fly Anglers, taught fly tying, and is a current member of the Olympic Fly Fishers of Edmonds. He has been building and repairing bamboo fly rods since 1958. He uses his engineering background to design and build the necessary tools and equipment and uses computer programs to design rod tapers. He taught bamboo rod building at the Federation of Fly Fishing Conclave in West Yellowstone, Montana. Ray has presented programs at numerous fly clubs in Washington and British Columbia and co-chaired two West Coast bamboo rod building workshops at Corbett Lake, British Columbia. His double parabolic rod tapers have become a hallmark of his work. As an entrepreneur, Ray handcrafted some 180 bamboo fly rods in his workshop and repaired hundreds of other cane rods. In the Northwest, he was known as the go-to guy when it came to cane rods. Well, Ray, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. So you ready for a lot of questions? Because we've got a lot tonight. Ray?
Yes.
I said, are you ready for a lot of questions? Because we've
Bet. I'm ready. Fire and fall back.
Okay. So we, as usual, and we got a good response from our audience this evening for your show tonight, because, and they've been asking me for a long time to get someone to talk about building bamboo fly rods. So we're going to give them our best here tonight, see if we can't satisfy
them. I was pleasantly surprised that there were three pages full of questions.
Yeah.
There's lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about. And after looking at your book, we're going to just kind of break the ice on this, I'm sure, but we'll do our best to get them all answered. Okay, well, let's start with the history of the bamboo fly rods. When were the first bamboo fly rods made and where? Where did this all originate?
Well, as far as I've been able to determine, the first bamboo fly rods were made in the early 1900s, somewhere between 1900 and 1910, and they were commercially manufactured on the east coast of the United States in areas like Vermont and Michigan and that part of the United States.
So we're talking about commercial rods.
Yeah.
But so they originated in the U.S. and not like Great Britain or... I would have thought Great Britain, I guess.
Not that I was able to determine. Some of the commercial manufacturers, like South Bend and Hedden and the old well-known middle-of-the-line rods, all came into being way back in the early 1900s. And there were some very famous rod builders that also started building at that time, probably the most prominent of which was H.L. Leonard.
Mm. Now, were these the names that are attributed? Are these all more individuals that started making these as one of a kind and then got into more mass production?
Well, they usually started with a single person. For example, let's take Hiram Leonard, whose fly rods are just about priceless today. It's very expensive to buy one if you can find one. And he earned a reputation because they were so beautifully made. And even to this day, they are just gorgeous things to look at and to fly fish. And what he did was to build some machinery so that he could mass produce the rods. And that's a different approach from the approach I've taken as an entrepreneur. I've decided, you know, I don't want to spend $25,000 or $30,000 to build fly rods. But I want to be able to build maybe a couple of hundred. So it takes more than just the cheapest way to build to produce that many rods.
Right, right. And it's been known as kind of it's been known for being, you know, a handcrafted art, so to speak, right? I mean, that's...
It is.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different features of the rod that you look at when you see one that's really a well-made rod. It's not hard to distinguish between a really well-built cane rod and one that's like a second-class rod. You can tell by the materials of construction, for one thing.
Yes, we did get a question from Wayne in Elmhurst, Illinois, and he asked about that. He said, what determines the value of older bamboo rods? Is it simply condition and the reputation of the maker?
Yeah, it's both of those things. The reputation of the maker, when you're able to determine who made that rod, and sometimes that's very difficult to do, but most of the rod builders had some way of putting their signature on the rod, or it may have been on the case that the rod came in or the bag that the rod came in. But you start with the reputation of the maker, and then you have to consider what kind of condition it's in. What I've seen over the years, and I've repaired hundreds and hundreds of cane rods, is that typically what happens is the tip section of a rod will get broken. And once that happens, the value of the rod plummets. Even if you have a really good rod maker, has a very good reputation, if the rod is damaged, if it's delaminated or broken or anything like that, that knocks the value way down.
Okay. Now, I know, didn't they, in fact, I have a bamboo rod, but I think it's, you know, kind of a cheap rod, but it came with two different tips. So was that common, or is it common today to have two tips for the rod?
It was very common to have two tips with a rod. Most of the, I'm going to call them the intermediate rod builders, like Hedden, Montague, those kinds of folks that built cane rods, would make two tips, but they'd be exactly alike.
Right.
And there were some builders, the better builders, would make two tips, and even though they might be the same length and they looked the same, the taper of the rod was not the same, so they served a different purpose. One might be for casting a dry fly, and the other might be for casting a wet fly.
Okay. So, as I found out with my rod, old does not equal valuable. Right?
Yeah, that's very true.
Cause they,
yeah, very, very true.
Because there were a lot of rods. that were mass manufactured, I guess, back in, you know, like the 40s and stuff, that really weren't quality rods.
Yeah, back in the 40s, bamboo rods were cranked out by the thousands and thousands. But still, there were some makers who maybe didn't have mass production, but their rods are extremely valuable. I'll mention one to you, like Everett Garrison, who was a very famous bamboo rod builder, and I have only seen one of his rods, and I had the pleasure of casting it. And sure enough, it cast just wonderfully, and it was a beautiful thing to look at.
Yeah, yeah.
But old doesn't necessarily compare to value, because there are some current rod builders who make just absolutely excellent fly rods, way better than the old mass-produced rods of the 40s or 50s.
I see. And those today, how do you know a quality rod builder? Is it by basically word-of-mouth reputation? Is that, I mean, if you didn't know, like you know what to look for physically in a rod, but somebody like me and I wanted to go out and get a nice rod, how do I choose my maker? Is it by reputation?
That's kind of a hard question. If you know the name of the builder, that's step number one. If the rod doesn't have any identification on it, or you don't know the builder, then it's going to be by word of mouth. Other people in the area where that person lived and built would know. Fly clubs typically will be able to tell you who the good rod builders are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk about bamboo, because that's where it all starts, right? And
yeah.
We've got a bunch of questions on that. Let's see here. Greg in Dallas, he says, what is the best bamboo variety to use for a rod? I remember years ago that Fine Woodworking ran an article on making bamboo rods. Have you seen it, and does it differ from your technique? So I don't even know if you know of that article. But
yeah, that there is something on the order of 1,000 different varieties of bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really only one that has been found that has the right physical properties to make really good bamboo fly rods. You know, bamboo is used for all kinds of things. You see it often in Asia, it's used for scaffolding. And
right.
In the United States, it's used to make flooring. But the one kind of bamboo you want to get if you're going to build a fly rod is called by its Latin name, Arundinaria amabilis. And you can get that kind of cane if you go to a well-known and established buyer of cane. And there is a man, Charles Demarest and Company, is the outfit in, I think it was Bloomingdale, New Jersey, where I bought all my cane from him, because I knew that he went to China himself and bought this cane, Arundinaria amabilis, which only grows successfully one place in the whole world. And it's a little 25-square-mile province in China, up from Hong Kong a ways. And so that's the first step. Make sure you get the right kind of bamboo. That question is a really good one. And I would recommend that you go to Charles Demarest and Company to buy it.
Okay.
The other part of that question about have I seen an article in woodworking about making bamboo rods, the answer to that is no. I haven't, but I did see an article in Fine Woodworking where they talked about the finishes for cane rods and what kind of finish had the best resistance to moisture.
I see.
And,
okay.
As I recall that article, it said that a wax finish over the top of a varnish was about the best you could get.
Okay. Well, I know we're going to talk later about finishes and refinishing, because there are a lot of questions about
okay.
That. Yeah, so let's get into the nitty-gritty of that a little bit later. There's a common name rather than Latin name for that type of bamboo, too, isn't there? I thought I saw it in your book somewhere.
Yeah, there is a common name. It's called T-stick bamboo.
T-stick?
Yeah, T-stick. T-E-A-S-T-I-C-K.
Stick. Okay.
That's kind of the common name for Arundinaria amabilis.
Okay. And there was a question about from John Carmichael in Ranbury, Texas, asked, is there any bamboo grown in the U.S. that is used? even for, say, less
expensive rods? I do know that that's been tried, and people have used some bamboo that they grew in their backyard, but it was not successful to try and grow T-stick bamboo in the U.S.
Okay.
You have to have a certain climate. I think where they grow the T-stick bamboo is at about 2,000 foot altitude, and it's a windy area, so the bamboo combs wave around in the wind, and it tends to make them strong.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So I would not recommend somebody go out in their backyard and hack down a piece of bamboo and make a fly rod. Just because it's too hard to build the fly rod not to have the best kind of bamboo.
Good point. Put all that work and use
cheap materials.
You
can buy one stick of bamboo for about $25.
Oh, okay. Not bad at all, yeah. Now, Mike in Quebec was asking about whether you can buy the bamboo up in Canada, but the company you just recommended was U.S., right? Are there any Canadian distributors of that you know of? Or?
You know, I've gone to a number of bamboo rod builders workshops in British Columbia, and as far as I know, there is no dealer in cane up in Canada. I've not been aware of one.
Okay.
Everybody seems to buy it from Demarest. There is a man that lives in the state of Washington that imports the right kind of bamboo, and his name escapes me at the minute.
Okay.
But you can't go wrong if you buy it from Demarest.
Yeah, I noticed in the back of your book you've got a couple of pages of resources for equipment and all kinds of things. There's just one listing under bamboo. That's Demarest.
Yeah, there was only one listing.
I guess he comes highly recommended. Yeah. So Ryan in Maryland, I guess your question was already answered about finding two nice 12-foot pieces in your relative's house. Unless that was T-stick, then you're probably not going to want to use it. Larry in Yuba City wanted to know, why bamboo now with all the lighter graphite rods available? So I guess he's asking, why would you want a bamboo rod?
You know, that's a great question. There's a bunch of answers to that. Why bamboo? In the first place, it's the only material where you can start out and actually make the whole entire fly rod from scratch yourself. And if you're going to build a graphite or a fiberglass fly rod, somebody else makes the blank for you. So to start with, it's not all your rod. So that's one thing. And another is that it's just simply the art of the project. When by the time you get done building the rod, you've got such a beautiful thing that it has a big factor of appreciation. And then a third thing to think about is the fact that it has good physical properties. And one of the things that's probably the most important of all is bamboo is resistant to failure from a nick on the surface. In other words, you can bump your rod on something, get a little nick on one corner of the bamboo, and it's not going to shatter the cane. But on graphite, the wall thickness of the tube, for example, is only about 25 thousandths of an inch. And if you nick the surface of a graphite rod, it's easy for the rod to explode when you're putting a real heavy load on it casting. I recall a fishing trip I took up on the Babine River in British Columbia for steelhead, and a fellow next to me had a graphite rod that it blew up about a 4-inch piece out of the middle of the rod because it had been nicked. And when that happens, you get a stress riser in the cane, and it loses all of its strength.
That's good to know. Good to know. Take better care of your graphite rods is what that tells me.
Well, yeah, you really do have to take good care of a graphite rod. Now, I don't want to poo-poo graphite rods. You know, they're very light. They're very powerful. It's easy to make a graphite rod from a kit that you can buy, but it's not the same as getting down the basement there with your plane and carving out the strips yourself.
Right, right. I guess you could think of it, too, kind of like I've got a friend who rebuilds, classic roadster cars and so forth.
Yeah.
And why don't you just go buy a new one?
That question a little while ago, part of it is the value of the cane rods is in the tradition. And I can think of a number of bamboo rods that I have seen that where the value of the rod is something like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. I can't think of a graphite rod that's worth anywhere near that kind of money.
Right, yeah.
So it is part of the, it's a tradition of doing it.
For sure, yeah. Well, Ray, we need to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we'll start digging into actually building of a rod here. So give me just 30 seconds, and I'll be right back.
All right.
Women's Fly Fishing Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's Fly Fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group-guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome, and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's www.womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Ray Gould about building bamboo fly rods. If you'd like to ask Ray a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Ray, at this point in the show, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? So what's happening in your fly fishing world?
Yeah. You know, Roger, I spend as much time as I can up in British Columbia chasing the Wiley Kamloops trout.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Go out there fishing with my cane rods and just have a ball. I'm actually no longer building cane rods. We've moved to a retirement home in Bothell. But I have written the two books on cane rods. The one that we're talking about on this show is Constructing Cane Rods. And then I have a second book I wrote in 2005 that's called Cane Rods, Tips and Tapers. And that book has sold out, amazingly enough. I have listed in that book some 300 tapers because usually the first thing that a rod builder wants to know is, well, what kind of taper should I use? So I made a collection of tapers by all kinds of builders and put it in that book, along with a number of other special tips on building the cane rods. And so that's taken up quite a bit of my time.
So that, do you know yet if Amato is going to republish that or not known
well,
yet?
You know, I didn't ask him about, I just found out about the fact that they had sold out the book yesterday.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm not sure whether they're thinking about republishing it or not. Boy, it sure went quick.
Yeah.
They sold 3,500 copies, just bingo.
Yeah. Well, folks, you go out to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and see if you can get a secondhand copy or get in line, it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to find.
You can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and look and see if they have one.
Right.
Or you might try eBay. I have not seen one of my rods on eBay. People apparently don't want to sell them.
Yeah.
Or a builder can buy one from me.
Right. Okay.
If they contact me personally.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you still have some copies.
I have a few left.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And what's the best way to reach you then?
I would say to use email, and I would be happy if it's proper for me to give you the email address.
Sure. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, my email address is raysu09@frontier.com.
raysu09@frontier.com.
Yes.
Okay, so there you go, folks. If you're looking for a copy and can't find one, contact Ray, and he might be able to help you out there. So. Well, good. It sounds like you're enjoying your retirement and doing a lot of fishing and can't get any better than British Columbia up there, can it?
That's what life's all about.
Yeah, yeah. Good, good. Okay, well, let's jump back into our questions here. Talk about rod building. Now, we did get a question here on the Internet, and same question prior to the show from Joe in Houston, Texas, and then Anthony Scott on the Internet. It said, how much does it cost for a beginner to get started and build his first bamboo rod? Is there any ballpark?
can give them?
Yeah. Well, it's difficult to answer that exactly, but I'll do it in a couple of ways. One, the first decision you have to make is, are you just going to build one fly rod, or are you going to build 10, or are you going to build 100? You have to make that decision first because it impacts how much you have to spend. And I would say that if you're just talking about building one fly rod, you're probably going to spend at least $300. And if you're going to make a number of rods, then it's more like $3,000. Now, mind you, the cost of building a number of fly rods can go way up if you buy the fancy machinery, such as milling machines and computer-driven equipment that does the work for you, whereas all the rods that I built were hand-planed.
Okay.
And so I always advise people, if they're interested in building a cane rod, is to start by finding a used rod someplace and then completely refinish it. You know, strip it down and replace anything that needs replacing, such as a ferrule or the cork grip, the guides, the tip top, because you learn an awful lot about building rods just by fixing up an old one. It's a real good first step.
Okay.
And I highly recommend that people do that.
When you say $300 if you're going to do one rod, are you talking about just the materials to build the rod, or does that include buying any kind of tools that you might need, or is that separate?
That would include probably making a few of the tools yourself. In the books that show how to build bamboo fly rods, there are three key items that are called planing bars. It's a bar that has a triangular groove in it that you can use to plane down the pieces. And if you want, you can build a planing bar out of a piece of maple. And it's not too hard to do. I actually have a drawing of it in my book. Shows how it's dimensioned. And that's a whole lot less than having a machinist build a set of three. They get to be pretty expensive.
Okay. So what equipment, let's just talk about, you know, building rods one by one. Because, you know, that's, you know, we're talking here at our audiences. I don't know that a lot of them are looking to create a business out of it. But so let's just say that the hobbyist that wants to create one rod at a time, what equipment would they need? You just mentioned one piece that you would make, but what are the pieces that you would have to buy or have in your shop?
Okay. One of the things that I would do on this one, Roger, is I would recommend that the builder spend a few bucks and buy this book of mine, Constructing Cane Rods, because it has a chapter 7 that's called Step-by-Step Construction of a Bamboo Fly Rod, and it tells you exactly what to do each step of the progress in building a rod. Of course, the first thing you need to do is to buy a good calm. That's the word that describes a length of bamboo that's called calms, C-U-L-M. You have to get a stick of bamboo, and then you need some way to rough. You have to split the cane, so you need something like a wooden maul and a screwdriver and split the cane into a number of pieces lengthwise, and then you have to rough plane those strips and then straighten them, and then you put them in an intermediate planing bar, which takes them down and makes them V-grooved, six pieces that are equilateral triangles, but they're oversized, and then there's a finishing planing bar that actually has, it's adjustable and has the tapers in it. So you need planing bars. You need some kind of a binder to bind the six pieces together. Once you get the six pieces made and you've applied glue to them, you got to roll them up and bind them tight to hold them tight while the glue is drying. So you need some kind of a binder. And in my book, you'll see two different kinds shown there. There's a very inexpensive one that's called a Garrison-type binder. And then there's one that I built at home out of an old sewing machine that I think the whole thing only cost me about $30. But it's a four-string binder, and it does a really nice job of wrapping the binding thread around the cane without twisting the cane. And you need a dial indicator for measuring the depth of the V-grooves in the planing bars. You need some simple tools like some kind of a device to clamp the cork rings together and glue them together before you put them on the rod. At least that's the way I make mine. You could put the rings on a blank one at a time, but I make up a cork handle that's about 7 inches long with the rings all glued to one another. And once that's dry in the gluing clamp, then I take it out and use a tapered reamer, which are, they're available for very little money. And then you need a real seat. You have to pick out a real seat that you want. You probably want a cloth bag and some kind of a rod tube to carry it in.
Okay. So that, in a nutshell, you kind of describe the steps that it takes to put the rod together.
Yeah, so, I had to do that.
Yeah. Now, and I think that will probably answer Martin Coleman's question, was how big of a jump is it to go from graphite rod building to bamboo? And from what you've just said, quite a big jump in some respects, because you're making...
Yeah, it is. There's really not very much to building a graphite fly rod. You just go and buy the blank and glue on a reel seat and cork grip and put the guides on it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a big job when you start building cane rods, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. We did get Rick Kruger wrote in here on the Internet, and he said the other dealer of cane, his name is Andy Royer. Is that who you were thinking of?
I couldn't hear that question, Roger.
I said Rick Kruger wrote in on the Internet, and he said he thinks the other dealer of cane, his name is Andy Royer.
Ah, yes, that's right, Andy
Royer.
Is that
the one you were?
I've met Andy, and he's a very nice guy. I think he lives over in Bainbridge, Washington.
Okay.
And he has himself gone to China and picked out his own cane and come back. And he brought some up to British Columbia to one of our workshops and showed us. And it's very good quality stuff. So that's another good source is Andy Royer. That's R-O-Y-E-R.
Right, right. And Rick also said that another common name for that type of cane is called Tonkin cane, T-O-N-K-I-N. So I guess Tonkin and T-stick and the Latin name are all different ways to
identify. Yeah, well, Tonkin is actually just the general area over there. It's, this little forest is located not very far from Tonkin Bay. I guess that's how it got the name Tonkin.
Yeah, from the area that it's in. Yeah, interesting. Let's see here. Okay, so, Tim Baer in Illinois asks, he says, is there somewhere to purchase the bamboo blanks or the bamboo that is already split and planed?
Yes. Yeah, the answer to that is yes. There are a number of places where people make blanks, and I think where I have seen them the most is on eBay. If you go to in the Internet on eBay, you'll see, and you have to play around with eBay in order to get the right words to come up with bamboo fly rod sections. But I did see them there just the other day. There was several types of blanks that are already made up and glued together, and you can get quite a nice cane rod that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, got some questions coming in on the Internet, equipment questions. Mike in Redmond, Washington asks, he says, what angle do you find best to sharpen a Stanley 9.5 plain iron to? How about a scraper?
This is Mike in Redmond?
Yeah. Do you know him?
I do.
Okay.
I think that I sharpened my planer blades to 45 degrees.
45 degrees?
Mm-hmm. I made them pretty steep.
Pretty steep? And that's all your plane?
Yeah, I did them. Well, I just used two. Well, I had three different planes I used. I used a Stanley 9.5, and I had a Stanley 60.5, and then I had a scraping plane that was made. Oh, I forgot who made that.
Nielsen. That's what he said in here. Nielsen scraper plane.
A scraping plane that it just stick the blade of the plane sticks down vertically. And you just relieve the back of the cutting edge a little bit.
Okay. So there you go, Mike. And, okay, good. Got that on. Let me see if there's anything else that came in. Finishing questions. We'll talk about that in a minute. Oh, this is Mike in Yuma, Arizona. He said, what are your thoughts on a flamed rod vise? I'm just reading it as he says it here, so I'm not sure it's going to make sense to you, but. What are your thoughts on a flamed rod vise, a non-flamed blonde rod with
regard to the benefit of faster action over the possible damage to power fibers due to the heating process?
Using a flamed rod?
Yeah, flamed rod.
Is that the word, flamed?
Yeah, flamed rod vise.
Yeah. You know, there's two schools of thoughts on flamed rods. There are a number of bamboo rod builders in the U.S. who like to color tone their rods, and one of the ways to do that is to flame it. They actually use a big propane torch and heat the outside of the comb up before it's split. And you can make a mottled appearance that way, or you can turn the cane darker brown. But there's another school of thought that says if you heat the cane up to where the enamel turns brown, you most likely have damaged the power fibers in the cane, because the power fibers, if you look at a cross-section of a piece of bamboo, you'll see that the power fibers are very dense right underneath the enamel, and then as you move towards the center of the comb, they get less and less dense. And so you don't want to do anything that damages the power fibers. As far as I know, the best way to handle that is to heat the rod up to about 350 degrees Fahrenheit and hold it there for somewhere between 8 and 11 minutes. Now, you have to be careful doing that, because what takes place there is you drive the moisture out of the cane. And when you buy a piece of bamboo, just a stick of bamboo, it has about 12 to 13% moisture in it. But you can heat treat the cane and drive the moisture down to almost zero, and then if it's put back at room temperature, it'll come back to about 5% moisture. But unquestionably, it stiffens up the rod and makes the rod stronger. And you can do that without changing the appearance on the outside of the rod. It will still be a lovely blonde color. I've tried doing a little flaming work, but I found that it was so tricky that I preferred to just to have a nice blonde rod that had been heat treated.
Okay, good. Well, that's an excellent answer here to his question. Now, here's another one about building a rod. This came in on the Internet, too. Chuck Campbell in Buffalo, New York says, what is the best way to take the set out of a bamboo rod tip?
Oh, okay.
Is there a way to fish the fly rod that avoids sets? And maybe you want to explain what that is, because I don't know what it is.
What the band in the fly rod is?
The set.
Cane rods will often take a set. That does occur, particularly in the tip section. If you do something like, let's say you're in a lake in a boat, and you troll with the rod rather than cast and retrieve, and so the rod stays bent in one direction for quite a long time. Many rods will tend to take a little bit of a set, and it's very easy to get those sets out of a rod, and you'll find that's true if you're refinishing or reworking an old rod, grandpa's old rod. And all you have to do is take the rod upstairs in your kitchen and turn on the stove and get the heating element in the stove hot, and then hold the rod up horizontally over the heating element of the range. Don't get it too close, and then roll it over in your fingers so that it's rotating around. And then when it gets warm to the touch, just pick it up and then bend the rod opposite to the way it is currently bent, and then sight down the rod and see if you've straightened it out. It will straighten, and they straighten pretty easily.
Okay.
And you just have to keep doing it a little bit at a time until you get the rod perfectly straight.
Okay, good. So there you go, Chuck. Hopefully that'll help you out with that.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back, and we've got plenty more questions to go through and plenty more things to learn, so...
Okay.
Hold tight. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. or call Keeney's Fly Shop at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, we're talking with Ray Gould about building bamboo fly rods. If you'd like to ask Ray a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Ray, many more questions to go here. These have to do with John in Portage, Michigan, wrote in, and he says, how is rod weight, like 3-weight, 5-weight, 7-weight, et cetera, gauged with a bamboo rod? Is it subjective by the line weight it cast, or can it be measured or calculated, I guess, before you build the rod?
Well, it can actually be measured. I have a computer program that was written by a rod builder in British Columbia by the name of John Bockstrom, who takes into account in the design of the rod taper the weight of the fly line. That's one of the factors you put in. And basically, when you go from a 3 to a 5 to a 7, you simply move the thickness of the rod up at each one of the stations so that it will be strong enough to handle that particular weight.
So that has to do with designing the taper.
There's a way that you can measure the weight of a fly line if you don't know what it is. There's a little tool that you can buy in fly shops that weigh the first 30 feet, I think it is, of the fly lines, and then it will indicate to you what weight that fly line is.
Okay, so there's one way to figure out what your fly line is, and the other, is there a way, because I know there was, Pete Gramp in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, asked, he says, short of buying a fly line at each weight and test casting, how would you know what weight line a bamboo rod is? He says, I mean this for both as you make a bamboo rod and for if you're lucky enough to be gifted a bamboo rod of old with no markings on it. So he's talking about building.
That's a good one. And it comes up quite often, actually. And what I have found in my own work is that when I get a rod in the shop to fix, and then the owner wants to know what size fly line. Well, I've got a bunch of fly lines. So I say, well, let's go out in the backyard and we'll see how it feels when we cast a 4-weight or when we cast a 7-weight. And you can tell by casting the rod whether it's really designed to handle that rod, that weight fly line or not.
Okay. But there's no, that's really the only way. There's no kind of measurement.
Well, other than having that little tool that I just mentioned that you can buy in fly shops, if you want to know what weight the fly line itself is, you actually take the first 30 feet of the line and hang it on this little scale.
And but that tells you the line, but not the rod. So
and that's right? Just the weight of the line.
Right.
It'll tell you what weight the line is.
So when you're trying to build a rod to handle a certain weight line, then that has to do with the taper design. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's always the biggest topic for discussion in any rod builder's workshop that I've ever been to is always about what should the taper of the fly rod be. And I have done quite a bit of studying about that, and there's some great articles in this book of mine about the taper of a fly line, the different kinds of tapers, and how they feel on the rod when you cast them.
So that's really something you have to do your research on, either get your book or find other books and
well,
articles.
Yeah, you do. You know, I'm an engineer, so I was reading a book that was written by Garrison that had about a 20-page discussion in the back of the book about how you mathematically calculate the size of a rod to handle a certain weight fly line. And I remember when I first started building rods, I said, well, I can do that. I know how to make those calculations. So I sat down and did it. And it took me 23 pages of calculations. Well, now you just have a computer program, and you can plug the data in a computer program, and it prints out a sheet to you that says, here's what the thickness should be at 5 inches, and here's what it ought to be at 10, and et cetera, until you get to the big end of the rod.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very nice. It makes it easy for you.
So folks should just go out there and maybe search on the Internet for computer programs to calculate
yeah,
paper.
I don't know that Bockstrom sells his. There's a fella in Michigan, Ron Bartsch is his name, that has a computer program. And there's another man by the name of Histand that has a computer program. And they're all starting points, you know, just to get you started in the right way. And another way to do it is just to look up the taper dimensions of well-known rod builders. And I've got this second book I mentioned to you a while ago, has 300 different tapers in it. Made by all kinds of rod builders. And they cover everything from short rods to spay rods.
Wow.
And
yeah,
so you could just go in there and pick out one of those and build it like that.
Yeah. There was a question, and because we're talking about that, and you're a British Columbia guy, Dennis in New Jersey want to know, what bamboo maker and taper would you recommend for Great Lake steelhead fishing? So I imagine that that involves a particular taper for a steelhead rod.
Yeah. You know, I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
What I would do if I was going to go back and fish in the Great Lakes for steelhead, I would try to find somebody in the Michigan area. Probably this fellow, Ron Bartsch, could put you in the right place to find out what kind of rod to get to fish back there. Actually, it won't be any different from a rod you would use to catch steelhead here in the Northwest.
Right.
In Washington or British Columbia or Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find some there.
But you have to have a taper that's constructed that has some backbone to it to support the fight.
If you're going to fish for steelhead with a cane rod, well, there's two things I think of. You'll probably want a rod that's 8.5 to 9.5 feet long. And the issue is that more and more fly fishermen that are fishing for steelhead go to spay rods. Now, you know, spay rod is somewhere between 11 and 16 feet long. And I do not recommend that anybody build a spay rod on a cane because they're simply too heavy. And
wow.
I would recommend that you get a graphite rod for that purpose.
Okay.
Because they're much lighter and easier to handle. Unless you got an awful strong arm.
Yeah. That's for sure.
But there's a good place for graphite rods is in the spay rods. They're two-handed rods, and they're, usually 12 to 14 feet long, sometimes as much as 15 or 16.
Okay. Another question from John Carmichael in Texas. He wants to know, is there a way to make a fast-action bamboo fly rod?
Oh, yes. Absolutely, there is. And that's where you have to study the design of the taper of a fly rod. Mm-hmm. And what you want to do is you want to have a rod that has, where the taper design has a steep, it's a term called rise. It's the increase in taper over 100 inches so that it's a fast action and will be the result of a design where the increase in taper is faster. You get a larger rod at the butt section than you do for a medium or a soft fly rod. In other words, I don't know if I'm describing that as well as I should, but a soft action fly rod will be one where the increase in the taper from the tip to the butt is not very large. And as
right.
you increase that taper from the tip to the butt, the rod gets stronger and stronger and the action gets faster and faster.
Okay, great. No, you've explained it well. Good. Chip in Kentucky wants to know, how do you dry the bamboo? And you had mentioned before when we were talking about flaming, about a method you were using to dry it out. And he also wanted to know how you cut it and the tools that you need to. I think he's talking about splitting it. But do you normally dry the bamboo before you start working with it?
I dry the bamboo after I'm partway along in the manufacturing. In other words, I take the culm and split it into pieces that are maybe 7/16 of an inch wide all the way down 12 feet long, and then I plane them down to where they become triangles that are maybe quite a bit oversized from the final taper that you want. Then I wrap those up with a rod binder, all six pieces wrapped together in a hex, and I put them in a drying oven that I built. And there's a picture of that drying oven in my book, Constructing Cane Rods, which basically it's a 4-inch aluminum pipe that has fastened to the bottom of it a strip heater that I think it was 1,800 watts. And then it's insulated on the outside. And then I put a tray, an expanded metal tray, down the middle of this piece of pipe so that I could set the pieces of cane on that tray. And I would just heat it up, to 350 degrees. And when it gets to be about 8 minutes, I start watching to see if there's a steam vapors coming off of it. And at 11 minutes, I take it out. And partway through the moisture control, you'd pull the section out, turn it around end for end, and put it back in to make sure that the heat treatment is equal all the way along the rod.
Okay, good.
There was another part to that question. What was the second part?
He says, how do you cut the bamboo?
How do I cut it?
Yeah.
How do I split it?
Split it, I think, is what he means.
If I want to cut the 12-foot length into shorter pieces, I just use a hacksaw. To split the culm into different pieces, when I get the cane, the very first thing I do is I take the mallet and the screwdrivers and I make one split all the way down the length of the rod. It's called check splitting. And what that does, it allows the cane to dry out from the inside as well as the outside, right? Because the way that the culm is made is that every position along the rod where there's one of these nodes on the outside, the little bump, on the inside there's a diaphragm clear across the cane. So in order to get the air all the way down, you have to split the cane open.
Right, that makes sense, yes. Okay, so that's just a screwdriver and a mallet. Just go for it.
Yep, that's what I did. I had a couple of different screwdrivers, but and then of course you'll also need a gouge, because once you get the cane split open to make these strips out of, you've got these pieces of this diaphragm sticking up, and you have to chip those out of there. And I just used a gouge and a mallet and knocked them out that way.
Okay. Lou Martin in Canyon City, Colorado, wrote in and he asked, I believe straight strips is the key to planing accurate tapers. How do you prepare and straighten your strips?
Oh, well, you know, I made a special little machine, a little tool that I used to straighten the strips with. And it's kind of hard for me to describe, but, well, again, I hate to keep doing that, but there's a photograph of it and actually a drawing of it in the book that shows you how to do that. And it's kind of like putting a piece of cane in a vise and tightening up the vise and straightening it as you go along. Because I straighten the rod by holding each of the strips over the flame of an alcohol lamp and then just bending the strip straight by and look down, sight down the strip by eye to see if it's pretty straight. And then if further straightening is needed, I use that tool that I just described.
Okay.
It is very essential to have straight pieces. And then one thing that you'll find is that when you've got the rod almost down to size, but not quite, you want to wrap the six pieces up again and put them in the oven and make your final heat treatment on that if it isn't already to your satisfaction. And then bind the pieces tightly with twine and then take them out of the oven, and you will find that the pieces come out quite straight. So that's done after you've done your manual straightening. Then you put it in the oven and do the heat treating, and the pieces come out quite straight.
Okay. Ken in Ontario, Canada, wrote in and asked, he says, splining a rod is always a big debate in the rod building community. I've always believed the rod should vibrate properly and disregard where the spline is. How do you approach the spline on your rods?
Oh, yeah, I think that first word is spining instead of splining.
Oh, spining,
you have
okay.
to find the spine of the rod. And, well, what I do, I take each of the sections, the butt section or the tip section, and hold it vertically and with the larger end down on the floor, and I just press down on the top of the rod with my finger, and the rod will all of a sudden flex in one direction. And what that tells you is that the outside curve of that section of cane, that's the soft side. The inside is the hard side. Well, you want to put the guides out there on the soft side, on the outside of the curve, so that when you're casting the rod, you have the highest strength in loading up the rod is that side that's opposite the soft side. Sounds kind of funny, but it does seem to be quite effective. And you should try to do both the tip section and the butt section so that each one has a spine identified, and then put the spines in the same plane when you assemble the rod, and that way the rod will be synchronized.
Okay, and so I think that answers. We had a question that came in on the Internet from Mike in Souderton, and so that I think answers his question too. So, good. Let's see here. Oh, Pete Gramp again in Pottstown, Pennsylvania asked, do you use color preserver or NCP thread? And what's your preference and why? What are the pros and cons to each?
Oh, yeah, interesting. I use both. What I have found is on most of my rods, I have tied with nylon. And if you put varnish on thread that does not have color preserver on it, it changes color. And so what you start with isn't what you get when you're done. And if you use color preserver, then the varnish does not change the color of the thread when you varnish the rod. So what I ended up doing is I just took a length of a bamboo rod, an old chunk of bamboo, all six pieces put together. And I use that as what I call a color stick. And I would take all the various kinds of colors of thread I had and make a little wrap and go an inch away and make another wrap of a different color and then varnish them to see what color they changed to. And by doing that, then I could show the customer what the wrappings were going to look like when the rod was finished. Because it's a slightly different color than the color of the thread.
Right. Okay. Jerry Hopewell in California, he says, how and where do you obtain the graphite inserts for your rod? What type of binder do you use?
Oh.
Do you use graphite inserts?
Yeah. The graphite insert was one of my little inventions. And actually what I did, a friend of mine and I went down to the graphite workshop down in Woodland, Washington. There's two of them down there. And we got a tour through the shop, and because my friend was the owner's lawyer. So we got a tour through, and I was explaining to the owner of the graphite rod shop what I wanted to do in the way of putting some graphite inserts inside of my rods. And so he gave me some pieces of graphite just gratis that I could use to cut up and get little pieces of graphite to use to put on the inside of the rod. Now, the graphite insert always goes in the butt section of the rod, and you can't go very far up in the tip section, because if you're going to have bamboo on the outside, you have to have at least 70 thousandths thickness of bamboo in order to get a good glue joint, so the glue joints don't break. And so that limits how far up the rod you can go. And there's a description of how to do that in one of these two books of mine. Just exactly how to do the graphite inserts. And
okay.
I'm still fishing with one that I built here, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. And it's really interesting. They give you a stiffer butt section because it's so strong, and it moves the action of the fly rod down towards the tip more. And so if you want a fast tip, that's one way to get it.
One way to get it, too. Okay. Okay, another question from Hal in Knoxville, Tennessee. Do you crown the tabs on your ferrules? Do you put the tabs on the flats, or do you bend them over the apex?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do a very extensive job, and I would refer the caller to my rod book that's called Cane Rods, Tips and Tapers. And tip number 7 on that book, which is on page 22, describes in words and in photographs exactly how I thin down the end of the ferrule, and then where the ferrule is serrated, how I make V-notches in it. And it shows that very plainly in these pictures that are there. I use a Dremel 7120 a diamond disc point to make the notches in the ferrule. And that way, if you make the end of the ferrule very thin, I mean like paper thin at the very end, and slide when you go to slide the ferrule onto the cane and wrap it tightly and glue those down, why, it prevents that age-old problem that people have with cane rods of getting thread cracking right at the end of the ferrule where the ferrule meets the bamboo.
Okay.
It's a real good little trick.
Yeah, sounds like it. Good. Okay, we got about 10 minutes to go here, and we've got some other finishing questions here to deal with. Let me do one. Let's just move into this finishing. We've got, first of all, a question from Rick Takahashi, and he's been a guest on our show. We did a show with Rick on midges, and he's got a new book coming out, too, Terrestrials, I believe. He's in Fort Collins, Colorado, and he asks, what product do you like to use to remove the old varnish without damaging the blank? So we're talking about refinishing an old rod here. So
let's see. Gee whiz, I've got to try and recall. What I use a varnish remover that I bought in the hardware store, and for the life of me, I can't remember the brand name of it. But I would put the varnish remover on the rod with a brush and then wipe it off quickly. You don't want to leave it sit on there too long. And I have never had any problem with the varnish remover damaging the glue joints. I want to say something like Casco varnish remover. That's probably not the right name.
Okay.
And I don't think I've written anything on that in any of the books.
So that's just quick application, wipe it off quickly, because you don't want it to start working on the glue joints. Correct? Ray?
Oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Okay. I said, so your tip is to use the varnish, just a regular varnish remover from the hardware store, but don't leave it on too long because...
Yeah, don't leave it on too long. And I would always wipe the varnish remover off of the rod using steel wool.
Okay.
And it turns out very nicely, and I've done hundreds of rods that way.
Okay. Question from Pete Gramp again. It says, I hope this isn't too specific. And we haven't gotten anything too specific for you, Ray, so I'll throw this one at you. He says, I am refinishing, not restoring, an older Hedden bamboo rod and adding additional guides for balance and fishability. The original places where the guides were located are stained. Is there a way to get rid of the stains without hurting the blank?
Yeah, you know, the answer to that's pretty easy. The answer is no. There's no way to get rid of the stains. I've run into that problem in quite a number of old rods. Wherever the foot of the guide was sitting on the rod, there'd be a black staining. And I tried all kinds of things to get that stain off, but I was not able to do that successfully. So I always put the guides right over the top of where those old black marks were, where the feet were. And, of course, that limits what you're able to do in a way of adding guides for balance. And so it might not look the prettiest, but maybe the balancing is worth it to you.
Yeah, I guess that's a decision you have to make or restore it to its original state, right, and avoid that staining.
Yeah.
Question from Bassman in California. He says, I have a South Bend bamboo fly rod. I plan to refinish the rod. What type of a coating should I use to refinish the rod I plan to use for fly fishing? And I think there's some other questions about that, too. You know, what is the proper finish for a bamboo rod?
Well, I would suggest that if you're going to build a cane rod or if you're refinishing a cane rod, that you use a polyurethane varnish. The one that I used on all of the rods I built was a Pratt & Lambert R10 was the number of it. It was a polyurethane varnish. And, you know, I'm not sure that they make that anymore. I know they also made a number 63 varnish that was pretty good. And there are some new varnishes out that are probably just fine. There's one that I can think of that's called Ghostthane, Ghosthane. And I believe that was made by Pratt & Lambert also. So that's the kind of finish I like. I never finished one with epoxy. That just didn't seem too heavy a coating for me.
Okay, here's Jim in Kansas City asked, he says, this question's about, not so much about building, but about maintenance. He says, one of my bamboo rods has acquired a milkiness to its finish. Is there any way to restore it other than completely refinishing it?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I've never had a rod where the finish turned milky, but I suspect that what happened is that rod was kept in an area where the moisture content was too high and the rod was damped. Or perhaps it was put away in a rod bag that was wet at one time. I think the only way to do that is to make yourself a little drawing of the rod indicating where the guides are all located, and take the guides off and take the finish off and start over. Put the guides back on and then rewrap the rod and refinish it again. And then I believe in putting the rods in their rod bags, in their rod cases, and stand them up in one of the warm rooms in your house.
Good
I think
tip.
That's very important to do. Never put a rod away that is wet or the bag is wet. You just don't want to do that. It'll ruin the rod for you.
And don't store them horizontally either. Okay, good. Fred asked, do you use glass to make the bamboo smooth?
I don't know what that means.
Okay.
I don't know what that question means. Do I use glass? I may be thinking about taking a piece of glass and using the edge of it to drag along the surface to make it flat, or laying the glass up against the cane before you put the guides on, but it's already varnished to make it flat. I have not done that, and there may be some benefit in doing that if I could figure out just exactly how he means to ask that question.
Is there anything? What do you do before you put the final finish on? What kind of conditioning do you do to the bamboo?
Well, what I do before I put the final coat on, and I usually use 3 coats of varnish, is I use quadruple zero steel wool and lightly polish the outside surface of the rod to make sure there's no dust particles have been picked up or there's no runs or anything like that. And then I wipe it down with a tack rag, and then I dip the rod. I have a rod dipper that puts the varnish on. I don't put it on with a brush. I dip the rod down. I submerge the rod, windings and guides and all, into the varnish, and then draw it up out of the varnish very slowly at about, I think it's 4 inches a minute, and then immediately hang it up in a rod drying cabinet I have, which is a small cabinet that's maybe 6 feet tall, and it has some hooks on the top, and I just put one end of the rod up in the hook, and the other end hangs down, and down in the bottom of the rod drying cabinet is a 100-watt light bulb that will warm up the cabinet to about 100 degrees, and it's ready for the second coat the next day. Works very nicely.
That's what Rick Takahashi asked also, how do you get a sag-free finish? Well, that's how, I guess.
That's how I do it.
Yeah.
It really worked remarkably well, and it's very simple. And the trick seems to be to pull the rod section up out of the varnish that it's being dipped in at a very slow rate, and then each time a guide comes up out of the varnish, you stop the machine that's pulling it up out of there, and you take a little, I call it a squeeze bulb, and blow the bubble film out from the snake guide. And because that's usually where a run will occur. The film will build up in the snake guide and then becomes a run down the bamboo. So you blow it out when it first comes up out of the varnish, and it won't do that.
Okay. Tip came in from Kenneth Prager about the milky finish. He said, milky finish can be laid out again with a solvent for the varnish. Sometimes denatured alcohol can be used to test it on a small section. So that might be something, I forget who asked that question, but something you might want to try. We got a couple more questions, and then we'll call it quits here. I got a couple online here, Ray, that I want to try to get.
Okay.
What is meant by parabolic taper?
Oh, that's back to the old question about understanding tapers. A parabolic taper, I will define that for you. A parabolic taper is one where It's not the thickness of the rod, but it's the diagram of the stresses of the rod from the tip to the butt. The stress graph is a parabolic curve.
Okay.
And when you use a parabolic curve like that, you get a rod where the thickness of the tip section increases a little bit faster than a straight line taper. And I love parabolics. It makes the rod, to me, feel much more like when you're casting it, the rod is working for you.
Okay. Again, described in your second book on tapers? You talk about
It is. There is a section on parabolics in my second book,
okay.
And there's also some parts of it in the first book.
Okay. Another question from Mike in Redmond, Washington. What is your preferred node placement? 2x2?
Oh.
By 2, 3x3, or garrison rotation? Then we do lunch again.
I do have a preference, and my preference has always been I use 3x3. And the reason for that is if you build enough fly rods, you want to be sure that you get the most out of any one comb. And I found that I can get the most out of a comb if I use 3x3 node staggering, and I only make the sections of the rod 1 inch longer than the final piece is going to be. And that way, you'd be surprised how many pieces you can get out of a comb.
Okay. And then one final question. Rick Takahashi asks again, how important in the aesthetics of building your own bamboo to have a signature on the rod that is calligraphic in appearance? Do sloppy signatures decrease the value of the rod?
Well, if it's a well-known rod builder, I think his signature will be acceptable. But you have to recall that there's a number of ways to put your signature on the wrap, on the rod. Some people actually use ink and write the signature on the rod right above the cork grip. I've done a number of rods that way. And another way that's done is some people use what they call a signature wrap. In other words, the little wraps right down above the cork will be arranged in a certain pattern that identifies that maker. And then a third way that I like is to take the butt cap of the rod and have it engraved on the butt. I put my name on the bottom and it just says by Ray Gould. And that's a nice clean way to do it too.
Good. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. We've already run over, but we did get through most of the questions, so I'm pretty happy about that. But time to wrap things up, and we're going to be giving away here, Ray, a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and also we'll be giving away a copy of your book, which is the first book, Constructing Cane Rods. So stick with me a few more minutes here, and we'll do just that, and we'll give these prizes away.
All right.
Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S, Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's family, T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on the link and leave your comments, and we'd really appreciate it. So now it's time to give away our prizes, and the winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. And if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so that you have a chance winning some of the incredible prizes we have to give away. Now, if you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with information on how to receive your gift. We'll do that by email. So we will be giving away first a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the Federation, you can go to fedflyfishers.org. That's fedflyfishers.org. So check them out, and I'm sure you'll be impressed at all the things that they're involved in. Let's see here. I need to, just a second, get myself organized here. The drawing. OK, Okay, so I'm going to run a random selection here from our database and get here. And it's Mike Marino. Mike Marino. So, Mike, congratulations on winning that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And Mike's in Pennsylvania. So, congrats there. Now we'll do winner here for the one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, courtesy of Amato Books. And if you want to find out more about Amato Publications, go to amatobooks.com, amatobooks.com. They are also the publisher of Ray's books, both of his books. And our winner of that is Michael Vaughn in Idaho. Michael Vaughn in Idaho. So congratulations, Michael. And get your name written down here. And you will be getting that subscription, so congrats on that. Now I need to give me a second here, and we're going to give away Ray's book. Have to lost my page for that, so to regroup here. Give me a sec. We go. Okay. And clear my queue here of everybody. So here's the question I'm going to ask, and you can give us the answer on the form on our homepage where you can send in your questions. Just type it in there along with your name and location, and then we will, whoever gets the correct answer first, who will win the Constructing Cane Rods by Ray Gould. Okay. Two-part question. Give me one of the common term names used for the type of bamboo that's used for cane rods, and also give me the name of what the piece of bamboo is called when you first get it. Okay? Two-part question, right? One of the common term names that's referred to the type of bamboo, and then what is the piece of bamboo called when you first receive it? So, Ray, do you think that's a I think I'm going to get an answer for that. Did I ask the question properly?
Yes, you did fine.
Okay. Okay, I got first answer is T-stick and plug. I think the first part of that's right, but not the second. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so that's no good there, Dean. Let's see if we get another one. Here's Keith Prager, says T-stick and comb.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's correct. Okay, so Kenneth, you just won Ray's book, Constructing Cane Rods, so congratulations. Now, Kenneth, what you're going to have to do is, I've got your email address here, but you need to send me your shipping address, and you can do that in the same box you just sent your answer into, or you can send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com, and then we'll get that shipped out to you directly from Amato Books. So we want to thank Amato for providing that for us tonight, and we appreciate all the things they do for us. So congratulations. Well, Ray, appreciate you being on the show with us tonight. It was really a pleasure talking with you. You've got just a wealth of knowledge I know we barely tapped into, but thanks for sharing with us tonight.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, lots of fun to talk about fly fishing stuff. Always fun. Well, hopefully everybody knows about our archive, but if you're new to Ask About Fly Fishing, be sure to check out our archive on our website. It's in the bottom of, it's on the homepage. There's links to it as well as the bottom of every page in the footer. You'll find over 170 shows there that we've done from almost every aspect of fly fishing and types of fishing and fish and locations and all kinds of things. So check it out. I'm sure you'll be impressed with the knowledge you can glean from that and enjoy yourself out there. Our next broadcast will be on September 4th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, I'll interview Rick Hafley, and the topic for the show will be the most common nymph fishing mistakes. So I know we all make them. So Rick has made many nymphing mistakes over the years and has also watched many others do the same. So sometimes knowing what not to do can make the difference as well. So join us to sort it all out and clean up your nymphing techniques. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska, Royal Gorge Anglers, Keeney's Fly Shop, and Power Fivers Online Magazine for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8, and we'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.